Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, Trish, I've a tale to tell you. You know, I went to Lourdes with three friends for a birthday celebration.
Not
little
a
weekend in France.
Not a pilgrimage.
Well, so you can imagine the flight to Lourdes.
Yes.
Quite a bit of pilgrimage on the flight to Lourdes.
Yes.
Your auntie Nun would
she's
have liked
been many
it.
Times.
Slightly fragile people, obviously, because they're going to Lourdes for a reason. So we're there to celebrate my friend Vic's birthday. Quite excited. Think that we might get ourselves a little Prosecco on the plane at lunchtime. Mm. Don't you know? Wouldn't that be a lovely thing to do? We're in row 6. The trolley's coming towards us. We think this is exciting. It's only an hour and 40-minute flight. So, you know, get a move on with it, trolley. Trolley gets to row 2. Lady behind me, slightly fragile elderly lady behind me, stands up and says, I'm on the wrong flight. I have to get off. I don't want to go to Lourdes.
No.
Now, we'd seen her being helped on, and she was with quite a large family, so it was slightly perplexing she was on her own, and the rest of the family were at the back of the plane.
Yes.
So that takes a while to sort out. She's just a bit confused. She does want to go to Lourdes. Mm. Trolley moves to row number 3, and we think, oh, Prosecco's getting a bit near, running out of time slightly. Then there's an announcement. Is there a doctor on board?
Oh, no.
Is there a doctor on board? Announcements get progressively more worrying. Is there someone with any medical knowledge on board? And a man comes running down and says, oh, their lady's fainted at the back. And we can watch while she's being laid out and helped and everything. Then she's the elderly lady helped back into her chair. Trolley's at row 4 now, and we think, okay, all that excitement. We can get our Prosecco, although maybe we want a cup of tea because it's getting a bit late. We're a bit tired. We're midlifers. And then there's another announcement. Would the person smoking in the lavatory please come out?
Oh, my God, it all happens.
Came to us, just in front of us, and they said, I'm really sorry. We've due to all the disruptions, et cetera, we can't take the trolley.
Oh, no more. No
so
more
we
Prosecco.
Didn't get anything, Trish.
Nothing.
No Prosecco. No Prosecco. What's it you call it? Lady Petrol. None of that for us.
But nothing.
That's the most exciting flight I've ever been
on. It's a bit like my stag do when I went to see my ailing dad, wasn't it, in the Alicante. But need to just clarify for the listeners, you weren't going to Lourdes on a pilgrimage, were you?
No, we were going to eat as much cheese as we could over 3 days.
Okay, in a nice place near, just happens to be near a pilgrimage? Is this the beginning
just
of something?
Just happens to be near the holy city.
Holiness, yes. The holiness.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Lorraine Candy.
And I'm Trish Halpin.
If you're living in a hormonal hot house, feeling a bit overwhelmed and in need of some positive, uplifting and comforting guidance on how to lead a more magnificent midlife, then this is the show for you.
We chat to celebrities and experts on all things midlife, from menopause and perimenopause to parenting teens, via fashion, beauty, wellness, nutrition, fitness, careers, relationships, caring for elderly relatives and your finances.
Yes, we ask experts and famous guests all the questions you need answered to have a happier, healthier and more harmonious second act.
How has your week been, Trish? Because I'd like to know what you've been up to since we last talked, because we last talked when we finished our recording. We always finish them on a high because we talked to loads of fabulous midlife women. We learnt the phrase sophisticated mischief, didn't we, from Christy Watson. I thought you'd be out there writing your own crime thriller involving killer cats after our conversation with the author Christy.
Well, not exactly. I have been contemplating it because I have been quite murderous about Margot this week, but that's another story. But yes, yes, very inspired on this season, particularly restaurateur Alicia Katona's curries. We've all been talking about those, been making those. They are delicious, big hit. But actually, wasn't our guests. You, it's you I've been taking some inspiration from, Lorraine. Not the self-hypnosis. You've inspired me. Not the self-hypnosis thingy, Bob. I'm saving that one from last week. Not doing marathon swim around the Scilly Isles. But I did take myself off to the Sergeant and Fashion exhibition at the Tate with my friend. Because you had a bit of a sneaky peek of that being on the board, didn't you? So it was so fabulous. I mean, it was an explosion of beauty, history and creativity on a dull March day. Thank you for that joyful recommendation. I loved it.
Yes, it's Tate Britain's. Very gorgeous. Still on now. Lots to see. I quite like the men's costumes. They were sort of dandy, weren't
yes.
they? Some of the men that he painted. All that red
lovely.
Velvet.
The lovely dressing gown one. Yes, very, very handsome.
Yes. Mm. Well, that's all very joyful, but I'll tell you what's not joyful. And as we record this, there's lots of headlines about the Lancet report on the menopause, or the menopurge, I think, as the Lancet
yes.
is calling it. They're, the headlines are saying that all this education for these menopausal women and all the awareness raised by celebrities like Davina McCall and Mariella Fostrop, all of that is giving the menopause a bad name, Trish, and we shouldn't be doing it because actually we want a bit of CBT and some, you know, meditating.
Yeah.
And most women, the Lancet report said, pass through this without any symptoms. We know from a survey the Fawcett Society did that 77% of women have quite serious symptoms. So that's simply not true.
No, I have to say we've had probably, what, nearly 200 women on this show, on this yeah. very show, and we always ask them about perimenopause and menopause. I think there's only one that I recall, and that was Gabby Logan, who said that she really didn't have any sort of issues with it and did kind of sail through it. So good for Gabby. But the other 199, not quite the yeah. same thing, is it? I mean, the idea that we just go for a bit of CBT and hypnosis, really? It's like, as
well, those things may indeed help. But
of course, but if that's your only option, this idea that it's being over medicalized, that's just not true, is it?
Well, Kate Muir wrote a report,
yeah,
and
she's
done all the studies on it. 80% of women, according to a menopause charity study, do not get HRT. So 80% of women in the UK do not get it. So that's hardly over medicalizing,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of background on this piece in The Lancet as well. A lot of it referred to the older HRT again, that's no longer yeah. prescribed by the NHS. So all of it is incredibly annoying. And it just makes me think that there's such a fear around female hormones. It
yeah.
just, it's so perplexing. I can only say patriarchy, but I do think I will stand by Leslie Regan. So anyone who's listened to the show should listen to what Dame Leslie Regan said when she came on. She is the Women's Health Ambassador for the UK, for the government. She's the highest ranking obstetrician and gynecologist in the country. She has had breast cancer 3 times and she is on HRT. Mm. And her interview was absolutely fascinating. So she knows all the sides and everything that's going on. And she would advocate HRT being the first line of prescription for women, describing the mental health and physical symptoms that women do. All we're trying to do is get the information out there,
exactly.
Trish, isn't it?
It is. And I do think that the way the media tries to make it divisive, because it's an issue about women, they want to try and make it divisive with
binary.
The headlines and the angles they take. But anyway, we will continue to bang on about it so that women
no
know
stopping
what's
us.
Coming at them and they get the right help and support when going through it. And just as importantly is how we kind of transition at this life stage, isn't it, from endings to new beginnings. And I was having a great chat with someone about this the other day, and she said that she views the menopause as your body saying, and what about you? Which I really liked. It's a mental stop sign to think about yourself and tell you, yes, that life is going to change. You're changing, but it's going to be good. It's going to be different. Nice way of looking at it.
Well, it is. And we're all about the positives of this stage of life, this second spring. It's pretty amazing, actually. Once you get the support you need, medically or not, then you do feel fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's actually a common topic on our Facebook group. There is a lot of women there. Well, there are a lot of women on our Facebook group who are a bit fed up in midlife of putting yeah. other people's needs before their own. It's like you wake up and think, hold on a minute, what about me? There was a lovely anonymous post we had recently. And the lady wrote, anyone feel as if they haven't really been themselves for the duration of a long relationship with children? I've been with my partner 18 years and things are starting to unravel. Being perimenopausal seems to have lowered my tolerance. can hear that for sure, mm-hmm. which has had the arguably positive effect of making me evaluate whether I'm actually happy at all and whether I've just been living someone else's world, looking after everyone without taking care of myself. I've begun to realise that I've always been too polite to put my foot down over things I didn't feel I'd signed up for, mainly just small things, but things that build up over time. I haven't really been myself at all, just a version of me that has adapted to suit someone else's wants and needs.
So true. I think we can certainly empathise with that, can't we? Because that is that what about me feeling. I think that really encapsulates it. But I think the trick there is to get some help and support before you make any big rash decisions and make sure that you know what's going on and you can put yourself first to take the time to work out what it is that you want.
I wrote a whole chapter on it in my book, actually, about this stage of life. And you do mould yourself a little bit around people as you go through life. But I don't think you can look back on that negatively and say, what a shame I did that. I wasn't myself. We all mould ourselves to fit in, make life easier and stuff. I think you just get a point at this stage where you really have the time to take stock and realise that things are changing.
Yeah.
It's a good moment to do that, isn't it?
Yes.
But not to feel negatively about who you've been, because we're all evolving, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm going to change the subject entirely because we can just do that on this show, Trish. We don't have to do a link. Just do what we want. There's no rules for us. Well, there's loads of rules for you, but there's no rules for us, isn't there? We're going to test or try out or take on one of the trickiest challenges women do face in life. This is breaking news, frontline, investigative stuff. KAD, hold on to your medals. For How to Win at Midlife this week, you, Trish, are going to explain how to buy a new perfume, aren't you? From hormones to perfume.
Yes.
This was always one of the hardest things. So we were editing glossy magazines together, 30 years, all the big glossies, billions of pounds worth of advertising flowing through from perfume companies, but also perfume being really personal and emotional for women. Mm. And how do you choose as you change in life, when one bottle runs out? Because I know you make the most of your bottles, don't you, Trish?
I do.
How do you move on to the next one?
Yeah, I always found it so hard to write about because it is so intangible, isn't it, fragrance? But funnily enough, menopause does come into it. It's going to be part of my little chat. But more of that shortly, as we do need to tell our lovely listeners about the fabulous special guest who will be joining us. After I regale you with my spritzing adventures, we have none other than Jules Oliver. She is definitely one of those women, isn't she, that you feel like she's been your friend for the past 25 years.
You're going to be telling me about Margot's spritzing adventures later on as well. I feel like that cat's done something terrible again.
Oh my goodness, that fragrance should not have to be smelt by anybody.
Yes, well, we all love Jules. It's hard to believe she's about to turn 50. Mm. She's going to join us today to talk about the transition she's going through at the moment in the run-up to that big birthday. I think hers is in November, as well as she'll talk about her two eldest daughters leaving home, something we've all had to deal with recently. Now, she's got 5 children, Trish. My youngest is 12, her youngest is 7. I really wish I'd been able to persuade Mr. Candy to have one more, or for me to have realised earlier on that I loved babies.
Are you sure about that? If you had a 7-year-old now as well, you would still go for it.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, that makes you a little bit sad, doesn't it? I think I'm going to make you feel better by treating you to one of our listeners' brain fog bloopers. Would you like that?
Oh, good. A blooper.
You love those.
Come on, fire away. I love a blooper. Okay. I love a silly blooper.
This is from Lindsay, who posted, menopause mishap number 143. In a rush to get to an important client meeting today, I accidentally left my makeup behind at my partner's house. No worries, think I'll raid teenage daughter's rooms for makeup. Quickly grab mascara. Result, sitting in said client meeting, giving advice and trying not to notice eyelashes keep sticking to my cheeks every time I blink. Turns out it was fake eyelash glue, not mascara, and they're still sticky 11 hours later. Not sure I'm going to have any eyelashes by this time tomorrow. Didn't put her glasses on, did she?
And also, we don't know what any of that stuff is they put in their bedrooms anymore.
Exactly.
Every time I go in and think I'll borrow a bronzer, it's green or something, and I think, what's it? It's some kind of TikTok malarkey that isn't going to work for me. We had another beauty faux pas from Bonnie who said, dyed my hair with henna last night, forgot to put any gloves on. That is a disaster, isn't it?
It is.
With henna hands. That's like when the teens do the fake tan and they can't quite be bothered to do it properly. So they just do it in a rush and they don't wash their hands afterwards.
And they smear it all over the
anyway,
towel.
Anyway, perilous times for all of us. I had my swimming costume inside out this morning, the whole swim. It's got a massive label out on the back as
and
well.
And a massive gusset outside. Massive gusset on the outside.
I know, well... Don't say gusset. I hate that word.
Gusset, tabard, all my favourite words.
Stop it, you and your gusset and your tabard. Okay, I think I'm ready for it. Should we push the boundaries of investigative journalism and talk perfume?
Let's do it. For this week's How to Win at Midlife, I've been on an olfactory journey, an aromatic investigation, a scented discovery.
Do you mean in search of a new perfume?
Yes, why don't that's you just what I mean.
What do they call them, people who do perfume? The nose. Do you remember on the glossies, they're saying, would you like an interview with the nose? And I could never, ever contain myself when someone said that to me. I don't mind. It's your little brain cells have been all sozzled by the scents, haven't they?
Well, it has been quite an undertaking, but actually a really enjoyable one and something that I needed to do because, as you mentioned before, I'm about to run out of my perfume and I don't actually remember the last time I bought one.
I think probably back in Stone Age, maybe. Wasn't it?
Yes.
You say bought one. We haven't actually physically bought one for quite a long time, have we? Because as it turns out, in a glossy magazine world, you do get sent. I didn't know this before I joined magazines. You get sent a lot of perfumes to try. We used to get them before they were even out.
Yes.
And there was all that talk around the adverts as well. It was a big thing, a new perfume being launched. And I've still got a few of the ones that I was sent. I actually had one made for me by my team. They had it done for my birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
I gave a talk about how digitally aware I was. Can you imagine?
Such a cool artist.
But
yes.
For the magazine world, I was incredibly aware. And so they had Byredo make me a personal one based on. And Sophie, my beauty editor, knew me quite well. It was called The Human Algorithm.
Oh. That is so hilarious and so
it is.
So
I've got the bottle still upstairs.
Oh, gosh.
It's
it nice?
So contrary,
like
Trish. Oh, did yes, like I really
it?
Liked it because I quite oh, like good. That CK1, that slightly sharper, more sort of masculine scent than a feminine scent, although number 5's obviously one of my favourites.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm down to the last drops of a bottle of Chanel number 5, and I also have a lovely Dior one. I wear it in the summer called Balade Sauvage. Do you like that? That means wild walk in French.
Here we go.
Love the name as well. That's quite
French
good fun.
Lessons.
What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? I've seen that Byredo one's run out because that would be years ago.
Yes, it has. So today I'm wearing my friend Nadia makes them herself. She makes a very small amount with no chemicals in, and it's called Lula. It's really lovely. It's kind of lavendery-ish, but it's not too sweet. I don't really like that. I like it to feel like someone says, oh, that lady smells nice, as opposed to what perfume is that lady wearing? So that's what I'm wearing today. Where did you start on your perfume journey? Because it's hard to pull a Chanel fan away from Chanel. And I know you will have researched the hell out of this, because there is no way one parts Trish from her little money. And
no.
I shouldn't imagine the perfume counter does a Wednesday over 50s discount like the garden centre.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're pricey. You're not going to get much change out of £100. Actually, but, you know, more than that. I think I probably will always have a bit of Chanel on the dressing table. You know, number 5, number 19. I like 1932 because those are the ones that my kids have grown up with and they associate with me. So I think that's really nice. They say, oh, that smells like mum, which is very sweet. But I want to try something new in that way that we've talked about here on the podcast, like new beginnings, everything's a bit different, second acts marking the new beginning. So that's what I wanted to do.
And also it will be new because guess what, Trish? The smells, the way we smell things, that changes too as we age. And what we wore in our 20s and 30s will smell different to us now. So, and you know why? Because our sense of smell starts to deteriorate along with everything else. When we go through the menopause, it's not just our sense of smell. This is to do with the estrogen in our brain fluctuating and gradually decreasing, which affects every single part of your body. Can't go through that again. We've told you all about it a million times, but your sense of smell changes. But also, listener, note that your body odor changes too. So the decline in estrogen and the imbalance of the hormones will affect your sweat glands, Trish. Did you know that?
Well, you didn't know that. Or do now.
It might make you sweat more and you might produce more sebum, that oily stuff you get on your skin. And then if you throw in some hot flushes and night sweats, you can see why everyone's body odor may change a little bit. We've talked about it before in the program, actually, but it's probably worth using antibacterial soap or shower gel. Lots of brands do them, or tea tree oil is another thing that helps with this. And that will reduce the odor-causing bacteria, which you might have on your skin as you age, because that's designed to fight the bacteria and break down sweat that causes body odor. Shall we talk about a more pleasant whiffs?
Yes.
Tell me then, how does one begin a perfume quest?
Wow.
Alongside all the other things one has to do in one's day.
Well, I did the sensible thing and called on someone who knows what they're doing. I called up Lorna Mackay, who is a fragrance expert. She's been a fragrance buyer at Harrods. She set up the fragrance hall at Liberty many years ago, and she's also co-founder of this fabulous online fragrance website and resource called The Perfume Society, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Lorraine. She did that along with Joe Fairley, who we all know. It's got really lots of great nifty tools to discover new scents. You can order subscription boxes to get little samples, all these sorts of things. So if you're a real perfume nut, I definitely recommend that. So firstly, it's worth saying that Lorna says that although our sense of smell does decline, like everything else, it's a use it or lose it situation. So she does recommend getting more in tune with this sense so that we're more present and conscious of the smells around us throughout the day. And we should be going out of our way to smell things because that just kind of gets it all working and going. Should they actually teach this to little children in French schools using their sense of smell?
Sniffing. They teach sniffing things.
That's sniffing. Fine.
Well, I mean, it does, if you look at the neurology, what your smell kicks off all sorts of thoughts and memories and synapses flying around in the brain. So, yeah, it is worth paying attention to. And we should, I think, be encouraging our kids to engage a little bit more with it. But, Trish, as we've discovered in previous episodes, your sense of smell is highly developed because you are a highly sensitive person. And that's an actual thing. I'm not making that up. I mean, you can't get on a tube train if someone's opened a prawn sandwich. You can't go into a shop if someone's got an egg sandwich on the go. You have a very... does that process make this process of finding your own perfume a little bit difficult? I mean, how do you go into a fragrance hall? It must send you...
I know. Well, I had a strategy with Lorna's help, which was good because it's... I was kind of a little bit nervous about it because I've had some terrible situations where I've loved a fragrance on someone else, sprayed it on myself, and then ended up feeling like I was going to have a panic attack because it was such a wrong on me kind of fragrance. But anyway, Lorna guided me through it. I mean, there's
so they have to give you a bag to blow into while you were sniffing all these things.
Oh my God, yeah, it was really hard. But anyway, Lorna, 13,000 possibly minimum number of fragrances out there to choose from. So how do you whittle it down? That's what we did. We kind of whittled it down. So the first thing I did was I used the Fragrance Finder tool on the Perfume Society website, which is really good. So you just put in fragrances that you like, and then it'll come up with six suggestions for other things that you might like as well, because obviously it bears in mind all the notes and the fragrance families and this, that and the other, the science of it, which I won't go into. So I popped in Chanel number 5, and it came up with the Maison Margiela Replica, one of their perfumes, Lazy Sunday Morning, and then a Malin and Goetz one, and a couple of others, which actually I tried before and you weren't right for me. So I thought, right, I'll pop those two on the list. Next thing I did was I got one of their discovery boxes. So for about £20, they will send you a box with all these little samples. They'll do a collection and lots of little samples because, you know, when you go into a shop, you can only get the spray on a little card. They won't actually give you a sample. And that's quite tricky because you want to try it on your skin maybe over a few days. So you can do this through Perfume Society. There was one on there that I really liked. It's, you know, that Essential Molecule one that everyone was raving about in the glossies about 20 years when it came out. Obviously, there's a bigger range of that now. And they've got one that's got the addition of black tea, which is really nice. And there were some new perfumers I hadn't heard of. So that was lovely. And then Lorna suggested also, like, when you smell something on someone else, ask them what it is, make a note. Do you remember when we met Davina last year, Davina McCall? She was actually wearing that molecule one, but the O2 one. Oh, I mean, yes. I remember smelling that.
You had a chat about that, didn't you?
We did, and I loved it on her. So I thought, right, put that on the list. My sister had a lovely Byredo one. Not personalised like yours, I must say. So yes, and then obviously Lorna suggested some things as well for me. She suggested Chanel number 22, Cosmos, the Kate Moss one. She said, well, you have to have a little smell of some of these ones that have got, they do additional.
What's that smell of Marlboro Lights, Trish?
I say nothing.
Libraries? I don't know.
I say nothing. No.
Marlboro Lights and a good night out. That smells off. Oh,
definitely. It was very kind of woody and mossy, actually. A bit mossy. Mm. I liked it. Not for me. A lot of perfumes now have these sort of, a bit like probably your lovely friend Nadia's one, like little therapeutic benefits from the oils and things that they put
yes.
in. So anyway, made a short list of all of these things, having done my research, and thought, well, I'm going to Harrods. Lorna said, you've just got to go to Harrods. You know, it's huge, but it is amazing. Went to Harrods. I know everyone doesn't have Harrods nearby, but you can go to your department store or wherever. I was prepared to be overwhelmed, but I stuck to my shortlist, or slightly long shortlist, of what I wanted to try. And I was actually in and out 30 minutes. Any more than that, I think I would have gone very fizzy and had a panic.
Sent a stretcher, and I had to send the perfume rescue party exactly, with a stretcher for
the
you.
The air ambulance, indeed. So
landed on the roof. Yeah.
I think a lot of us are a bit nervous about the sales assistants. We think they're like pushy yes. and they're going to expect us to buy something. And again, Lorna said, look, don't come at it like that, because she said they really are experts. Tell them what you're after. They'll give you some advice. Try some things out. And then you just say, I'm going to let that settle and wander off. And actually every counter I went to, they were absolutely lovely. And what she says is get the little spray card of what you like. Make sure you write it down, because you will forget the name of the fragrance. So say you get three or four from each counter that you go to. Let them settle, go off to the next one. And then once you've done all of that, have a bit of a whiff, and then pick four that you really like and go back and get a spray on your skin. So you've got one on each wrist and one on each inner elbow. And then you also say, oh, I'm going to let that settle on my skin, to the lovely assistant. They weren't judgy. They weren't pushy at all. And off you go home. And then you have to have a sniff after 2 hours, because the top note will have gone by that. After 4 hours, it would have gone through the middle note and the bass note. So you need to make sure that you quite like, you know, you like the way that it develops and how it works on your skin. We've all got individual biochemistry, of course. My skin might be a little bit dry. Now I'm in my midlife, perimenopausal years. If you've got olive skin, it's going to last longer. So there's all that to factor in. Quite the journey, quite the afternoon I had. Lovely.
Well, I think if you're going to spend upwards of £100 yeah. or something, then you want to do the research. Also, you know, it's kind of day out, something to do. You could take your daughters, do that kind of thing with it. So where did you get to on the four fragrances then? What are the top ones in the top of the charts?
Or in Trish's new fragrance chart? Well, so I went home and I kind of did, again, what Lorna suggested, which was just read up about the fragrances as well. Find a little bit yeah. more, because that'll give you a bit more context and background. So the ones I landed on actually were Divina's Molecule O2, which was really nice. But I also got the Molecule with the Black Tea, which I also really liked. So those two right. in the front running. And then Maison Margiela Replica, it's called When the Rain Stops. And I really like it, but it's an eau de toilette, so it's quite light rather than an eau de parfum. So I was just thinking, it might not last the duration of a day. So I don't know. I'm going to have a think about that.
Cogs wheeling in your head. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. And then I really liked Aesop, you know, the fancy sort of hand soap you get in lovely restaurants and things like that. Hand soap and hand creams, sort of all, again, very sort of natural. They've got one called, I'm going to say this wrong, Edisis, Edisis, which is really nice. And actually, surprisingly for me, it's quite a little bit spicy. Damp earth, dry woods, according to the description. I really like that. It's very nice. So I don't know. I'm still undecided.
How are you going to decide then? Because the levels of the Trish decision-making, they go on for some time, don't they? So now you've got the four.
I've got the four.
What will happen?
Okay.
Will I have to hear about this for the next year or so?
I might bang on.
Or will I have to hurl them all out the window and pick one for you?
I know, exactly. Yes, I might have to. You might have to drop Neil a hint from a birthday. That might be the thing. Lorna also said, if you are struggling, she said, come up with a word for how the perfume makes you feel. So sort of have a sniff. Think about how it makes you feel. And if you do have one of their little samples from their discovery box and you're wearing it over a couple of days, just make a note each day of what you thought about it. Again, it's that kind of connecting into our smell and not just taking it for granted. So I will keep you posted. But one more tip that Lorna had, which I thought was rather genius, was if you've got a few perfumes, you don't want to buy a new one, you can make a change by layering them up. So she says, just spray three of them on at the same time, because the chances are they're probably going to work together because they're going to be kind of scents and bass notes and things that you like. Layer up your perfumes.
Is that
ladies.
Like wearing your vests? Layering up your perfumes, layering up your vest. Well, brave Trish has been out in the world doing all these lovely things, especially for you. I did worry that you were going to make it to the end of this task, but you have triumphed.
Thank you.
I wish I could come and have a little sniff now, Trish.
Yes.
But we'll save it for later. You can do a bit of a layer up when we have our next cup of tea
on the computer
and biscuits.
Now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mum of five, author, children's wear designer, charity ambassador, and one half of Gen X's most recognisable British couples, Jules Oliver, is in the Postcards from Midlife hot seat today. She'll be talking about her second act as she heads into her 50th year. Feels like we've grown up with Jamie and Jules from the days of the Naked Chef TV show, which was filmed in their East London flat in 1999, to seeing Jules and their five children popping up in the pages of Jamie's cookbooks, which have now sold almost 15 million copies globally. I expect most of us have rustled up pregnant Jules' pasta, and many of us read Jules' helpful and hilarious Diary of an Honest Mum when it came out in 2006. The couple were teenage sweethearts and have been married for almost 24 years, but their family life has started to change in midlife, just like ours. Poppy, 21, has gone travelling after uni, and Daisy, 20, is at uni training to be a nurse. Petal is 14, Buddy is 12, and River has hit 7, and Jules says she's almost come to terms with no more babies. We'll be chatting about parenting, empty nest, larger families, baby loss, perimenopause, fame, social media, and how Jules' inspirational mum Felicity, who's 82, is the template from which she learnt her mothering and life skills. The Essex-born former model says watching her mum working three jobs and looking after Jules' father, who sadly passed away when Jules was 23, provided the emotional strength Jules has needed throughout her parenting journey, and especially during tough times, including the five miscarriages she suffered, one of which nearly killed her and has left her with PTSD. There's a lot of family guidance and learnings coming your way today on this podcast, and we can't wait to find out what's on the horizon for one of our favourite famous mums. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Jules.
Hello.
Now, listen, I was just watching a bit of Jamie and Jules back in the day on YouTube, because it feels like you two have been in our world as Gen X women for such a long time. It's actually been 20 years. And we've seen
ridiculous.
Your family grow, and we've watched you as a mum over all these years. But actually, I know you a little bit. You're actually quite a shy and private person. So how has that been, being in our life for the last 20 years?
Well, I think Jamie's taken control, so it's been fine. I don't really go to anything, probably don't really see me much. Yeah, I let him take the forefront, and I quite like being at the back and doing my own little thing. So I haven't really noticed it, and he doesn't mind me doing that. So it works quite well.
We can't believe it. You're turning 50 this year. It was a while ago for us, but we still feel like we're 21.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh. I can believe when I turn 40. So turning 50, well, I feel very privileged, to be fair, but I just still feel a bit in shock.
Do you?
Because I don't feel 50.
No, exactly. That's the thing. Absolutely. So, I mean, it is a milestone. It's a milestone in all sorts of different ways. Plans for celebrating? Anything on the horizon?
Oh, I can't make up my mind, which is a classic me thing. So I definitely want to do karaoke. I wanted to go on the Orient Express, but that's a bit much. So I've toned it down to maybe a day trip on a train. Just dancing. It's supposed to be dancing. I've quite liked some line dancing. Basically, I like a week of dancing.
My friends can keep up, but I don't care about the food. I don't care how tacky it is. I don't want to wear high heels. I want to kind of wear track suits and just dance.
That's very, very doable. But also yes. kind of at this age as well, something that we go through as parents is this, the empty nest. And you've yeah. got your two eldest daughters are off and away, aren't they?
Yeah.
How is that going for you? What do you feel like what advice would you have for any other parents kind of facing this year?
I mean, I'm still kind of feeling it. But also, I think I was thinking about this yesterday. You don't really know when you're going through it. It just kind of happens. And then you just pass and then you're okay with it. You're just always going to be okay with it, whatever, within reason, whatever happens. So now I've got used to it and we chat all the time and it's not the end of the world. I mean, I wish she'd be at home, but also she's having an amazing time. So I think you just kind of go, you just keep going. And then you look back and think, how did I not like collapse? And you think, well, actually I didn't, because life carried on and she carried on and we were all happy and it was fine. So I don't really have much advice. It will pass and you will carry on and it's fine.
I think you have to come to terms also in your 50th year, perhaps, with having no more babies. There'll be no more little ones. I would have had 10, but my husband was having none of it after 4. So the rumour I hear is that you might like to be a midwife, that the baby addiction is still there. Is that true?
Yeah, I wish I'd ditched modelling. I wish I'd started. I just didn't really have much guidance when I was younger, I think, because my mum was so busy with my dad. I wish I'd just gone straight to college and been a midwife. That would hands down have been the job I would have still been doing now. And I think I've probably been quite good at it. I mean, everyone says there's still time. This is the time you do it. I've taken the course. I mean, I've done one essay and I haven't submitted it because I think it doesn't sound good, but I'm trying. You know, it's been 2 years now. I did the course. It should have been done in a year. This is very me. So ideally I'd like to, but you know, I think it's just because I just want to hold newborn babies left, right and centre.
But, I mean, it's not surprising.
That's a dream job. It's a dream job, catching newborn babies. And then,
I mean, it's not surprising you're a bit busy, Jules, because you're still, you know, you've still got 3 kids at home and you've always been someone, you know, we've seen you are, at, you know, the coalface of parenting, getting into the nitty gritty of it. That's really what you love and what you've always kind of said that you wanted to do being a mum. And we are aware that obviously not everybody has the luxury of being a stay-at-home mum. But sometimes, you know, there is this idea of pushing the divide between the stay-at-home mums and then the working mums. How did that feel for you?
I think I always feel a bit guilty because if I can excel on World Book Day, I don't think I'm going to put it everywhere. I'm not very good at arts and crafts, I wouldn't. But if I were, I just feel like it's sort of a privilege that I have to myself. I can faff around with crafting and I can do all the things that working mums don't have time to do. So I do feel that sense of guilt. And I am so grateful. I will always say I truly am grateful that I get to kind of be at home 24/7. I mean, most of my friends work and they're amazing. And I just think, how do they do it? I know I have a job, but obviously it works within me. It's kind of all about where it fits in with me. So to go to the office and make a costume or kind of make a crown or be at every performance they do, I just feel so lucky. I feel very lucky, but I won't shelf about it because I just feel like there's a lot of parents who just, you know, on the WhatsApps you can see, oh, I can't make that time. I can't make that time. And I feel terrible for them because it must be awful. So hard for them.
Now, you're the youngest of 3 girls, and you started out as a model when you were 17. You got sent off to Japan by your agency, but it wasn't really for you because, as we've said, you're a little bit of an introvert. It's not your favourite thing. I know sport was your massive love at school.
Yeah.
Then you met Jamie and you stopped modelling in your 20s. And you said, having children is when I felt my life began. You were very lucky. You had the perfect role model for mothering in your extraordinary mum, Felicity. She's 82 now. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Felicity and what you learned from her?
Definitely her morals are very strong. She's a very strong woman. She could have been scary. She was quite scary as a child. I'd never step out of line because somehow she managed to do a man and a woman, a father and a mother's role. So she'd be mowing the lawn. She'd be whacking us for the tea towel. If we did bad things, she was full on. She did both roles. And I fully have respect for her from a young age. And I obviously still do. Like, that's the main thing, is I have respect for her. So that's why I may not swear in a podcast as much as that's my daily thing, because I know that she wouldn't be very happy. So I think I've maintained that respect. And she's always said to me, just as long as your children respect you, you'll be fine. So I kind of had that from her is what I've taken. And her, she's got very high morals. Sometimes they're so high, the three of us can't always match them. But you just kind of go, okay, mum, yes, sure, mum, because I'm 50 now, I should be able to say my piece. But I still have a lot of respect to how she feels. So she's a strong woman who I kind of fully looked up to.
She had 3 jobs, didn't she? She worked 3 jobs.
and you were the youngest left at home. So it was quite extraordinary for a woman in those days to be working while she had children as well. What did she do? How did it work on a day-to-day basis?
She modelled up to quite a late stage, I suppose. It was kind of up until... She did occasional jobs kind of before her 40s, which is quite unusual. Just kind of different sort of modelling jobs. She had cleaning jobs. She worked in cafes. She kind of did a bit of everything. So she wasn't really... I mean, strangely, she wasn't really around. So it doesn't matter. I mean, if you've got that strong role model, that respect and that love, shouldn't have to be doing my World Book Day costume. I mean, that was, she did occasionally, but as my dad became ill, she didn't really do costumes. We all did them. And so we learned from an early age to do our packed lunch, do our ironing, get up with everything we did ourselves. And she just kind of oversaw. So she was always there, but not really physically, just kind of, I knew she was there and I'd worry if I wasn't doing what I thought she thinks we should be doing, basically. Mm. So we grew up very fast, perhaps faster than I would like, but I don't think it's done any harm particularly.
And she is possibly the most glamorous 82-year-old I've ever seen. My goodness.
She's unbelievable. She does body pump on a Tuesday and a Friday. And she does, you know, she's like, well, I'm doing conditioning, so I won't be able to meet you for coffee. I think I'm not even doing body conditioning. Oh God, I better do my... So she's got her weights and she's got, I mean, the gym saved her, I think, for many. It's totally about mental health. So she looks incredible and she was a model. So she's got that on her side and she dresses very cool and it's lovely.
But we should just talk a little bit about your dad, your late dad, Morris, as well. He died in 1997. Yeah. And you told a really moving story lately, which made us a little bit tearful, but showed the strength of your bond and the way that childhood has shaped you. I mean, he had a stroke, he had trouble walking, and you'd take him out for a posh tea, which was
lovely.
He used to, connecting.
I know, he used to pick me up. He used to walk to my school. It's about a mile, and sometimes he'd just stop on a bench and I'd be thinking, what? You know, it's now like 3:45, so I'd think, oh my God, I'm going. I mean, when it's only 10, you know, I don't know if in those days, I know my son would be able to leave school until he had the all clear. Well, I'd say goodbye, say I'm going to meet my dad. I'd run halfway and he'd be sitting on the bench and he'd forget where he was actually. I said, Dad, do you want to pick me up? So then he'd say, I'd say, do you want a tea before we go home? So we go to the posh tea shop and then his leg would be keeling over, he'd be dribbling. But I wasn't embarrassed. I was kind of like, oh, well. So I'd be helping to his chair. But it was unusual because I was only 10. And it's kind of, I can't imagine my 10-year-old having the guts to do that, really. You know, the tea would be everywhere and the biscuits. But I'd just be so happy that I was having my tea and my biscuit. He was happy. Then we'd kind of walk to the restaurant again. People would be staring. I just thought, I'll sod you. And then we'd go home. But I think, you know, that was just because that's how my childhood was. And I thought that was normal.
He must have been fairly young.
My mum's 82, so he was 10, 12 years older than my mum. So, yeah, he was about 50. Yeah, he wasn't a young dad. Yeah. He was always quite an older dad. So he was about, rubbish at maths, and you put me on the spot, 50-something, 55. So he wasn't young.
So caring has been something really from childhood, really, that you've learned through watching your mother, living with your father through this illness. What advice would you have for anybody maybe in a similar situation who's either caring for a child with special needs or disabilities or an elderly parent?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard. My mum was very determined. She broke many rules. He wasn't meant to leave hospital. He was never meant to walk again. He was never meant to work again. And I watched her kind of say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not changing my house. I'm not going to put stairs. And I'm doing everything my way. I'm not changing my children's life. So he's going to come home and he's going to climb those stairs. So I kind of just watched her and I just followed whatever she did. And so if I came back from school and I'd hear him screaming upstairs, I'd think, and there was no one in, I'd run upstairs, pick him up. I think that's where I've got good muscles. And I'm sure it's because from the age of about 10, I was dragging him up, putting him up. I mean, I think it's probably with many children who care. My mum was working, so it just felt very natural. I didn't find it weird at all. I didn't find it unusual. I was a bit embarrassed at school because I realised no one else had this thing. So that was odd. But apart from that, I just kind of got on with it. That is it. You just get on with it and you don't know any different, I suppose.
That's great advice. You just have to sort of take each day, don't you?
Yeah.
As it comes. I want to talk about something which we have mentioned, oddly, you probably don't know, but we've mentioned on the show a lot of times and it is a, you know, we've talked about books that have been written about it. You are what I would call a highly sensitive person. And I know about this because Trish is a highly sensitive person. So certain situations make it quite difficult for you. Trish is overwhelmed by noise, for example, in certain things. She might have a bit of a panic attack in bigger, busy, noisy situations, lots of smells and things going on. And it's not really talked about, actually.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be a good opportunity to ask you, because I know a lot of people are, particularly women, a lot of women are like this, and they will just soldier on, and actually their daily life is affected quite a lot by being a highly sensitive person. So I just wondered if you had any advice for the women who feel that light bulb moment about, oh, that's why I react like that. That's why this is a bit more challenging. You've talked about you found it quite difficult at school, and school made you quite tearful at times, and you're a perfectionist as well, which makes you a little stressed about things. Any learnings and advice you can give other highly sensitive people, other women going through or dealing with it?
I just wish I listened to my own advice when I say I think I probably should have therapy. Because I think when my mum said, we had a dinner the other night and we were talking, and I said, I want to take one of my daughters to check for anxiety, ADHD, you know, all that sort of that whole circle of things. My mum said, well, I don't know about that. You know, you were fine. And I just turned around and said, Mum, I've struggled. I've masked for 40 years. So yeah, I am fine, but I'd love to have had 40 years of not feeling so worried and anxious and uptight. I just think that, especially girls, I'm learning after a bit of research myself, after my daughter, is that we mask everything. So I appear to be the most happiest, craziest person. I didn't even drink, but I probably look drunk the most. And then when I walk in the door, I just need to lay down. In fact, I probably have to the next day off. So I would say, for God's sake, just discuss probably why it started and why it's like this.
It's quite hard, isn't it, though, because you've got to adapt your, I guess as we get older, you work out ways of adapting your life so you don't say yes to things where you put yourself under that enormous, because it's physically exhausting feeling like that, isn't it?
Absolutely draining, and which is why, you know, sometimes Jamie even knows, he said, I'm not going to, we've got this thing where we're having dinner with Madonna, and I went, nope, not doing it. But it's a shame because I feel like I perhaps am missing out. But also, as I reach 50, I think it's with most of them, I think, oh, sod it, I'm just going to bloody do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get on the aeroplane. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that because life is too short. I really like that I'm getting older and realizing that life is too short and I'm doing things that I never would have done 5 years ago. So that's very positive. So hopefully that happens to many women.
Are you doing the self-care things to help with that? The kind of, I mean, I know you do yoga. Are you doing things that are helpful to your nervous system around being sensitive?
Oh, no, I don't do anything. I need to breathe. I need to do a whole host of things. But maybe cold water swim. I know, Lorraine, I watch you and think, oh my God, I really want to, but I don't know where to start. So I think I need to take time to work out where to start because there's a lot, you know, to do.
Now you're an ambassador for the baby loss charity saying goodbye. And you have talked about your miscarriages as part of that work that you do for them. And you described how one left you with PTSD. Mm. I mean, I've never been through it. I'm sure it must be so traumatic. Is it still with you, or how did you get through it and get over it? Does it ever leave you? What advice do you have about that?
I'm sure, I don't think it will ever leave me. I would like it just to disappear. I'd like to think it never happened. And it changed me and James' relationship probably for the better. So there's lots of lovely things that little thing left behind. But yeah, it is this. If I think about it, I then go deep into it and I have to go, I have to get myself out of it and I feel physically sick. Yeah, I don't know what advice to give because quite a lot of people I know have been through it. And I just think, again, it just helps to talk about it because often Jamie allows me the time to talk about it all over again in great detail, which some of it is just horrific. And then he listens and I think, and then I feel that's done for 6 months. I don't have to mention that again, just to remind you that I went through that. And then he's like, I was there. I know. So, and also for him as well. So yeah, it was just horrific. Each one's been horrific, but obviously that one, because I suppose I could have died. So that made it a whole different game.
So I'm assuming saying goodbye offers support, doesn't it?
For women
looking for some support.
They're incredible. Absolutely. They do so much work. So yeah.
So you haven't had therapy, but you
know,
it sounds like it might be helpful. I mean, we've both talked about it on the show, had therapy for various things. What's stopping you then? What's stopping you doing that?
My God, I'm so scared to do it in case I've just got 40 years of little worries that would just be huge. And then how long would that take to get off my, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm doing great, but when I do these podcasts and I talk, I think, actually, I've got a lot of things going. I've got a lot of issues. I'm too British. I don't want to talk about my problems and then cry because I just don't really want to do that with someone I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I have the number and I've gone to dial it and I booked the session. And then I've said, oh, my daughter's not very well. I've done this like 3 times. Mm-hmm. So I need someone to take me there, sit me down and say, do it, because I think it would just be very helpful.
You're in a way perhaps not doing the one thing you've done all your life. You've been mothering, but you're not mothering yourself. Yeah. We did a section on self-hypnosis last week, and the psychiatrist I talked to about it said we as women, he watches women soothing their children and really moving them from fearful to happy and all of those things. But actually thinking it's a bit of a luxury to do that to ourselves, but we have that skill inside us. So in a way,
exactly.
It's odd we don't do it.
Yeah. Mm. Well, when I talk to my elder children, obviously, as you know, when you've got teenagers, it's 10 times worse. Or my 22-year-old, I then therapize her, and then I think, oh, God, I really need to search myself, because I've sorted her out and I haven't sorted myself out today. Yeah, but, you know, and I wonder if my advice I've given her is right. They ask for advice 25,000 times a day, so I can only give so much. But you are giving quite a lot, you know, so you're exhausted. I'm just exhausted with talking, basically.
But you know what, Jules, it's kind of, you're not the only person who's said this. I know people going through terrible grief who are so afraid of what might be unleashed. But honestly, that first session, I mean, I literally probably cried for about half of it. Didn't even know why I was crying. Yeah. But this lovely warmth from this therapist and the space and the, and I left actually feeling a little bit better, and then it just builds. So maybe the first steps are always the hardest.
Exactly. But,
listen, you mentioned the kids, the teenagers, teenage girls. It's, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because in the public eye, I mean, you've got beautiful family, everything seems gorgeous and happy, but obviously that's not the case. Every kid has their issues and things they're going through. How do you kind of balance that sort of public, private? I'm sure they all look like they're best friends, but I'm sure there's squabbles going on like ours. And
they're a nightmare. But I just think I've always been out. I've never seen myself as, well, I'm not famous anyway, but well known, or I just don't see it. I literally go in as a normal mum to any event, to anything. And if someone says, oh, I can't actually believe what they're saying. So the kids have never really noticed, but they don't like to go to school with Jamie because somehow, obviously, because it's Jamie, but he's very confident. And, you know, he comes in maybe a cooler car, whereas I've got my Volkswagen, I've got 20. Everything about me is normal, and probably everything about, even though he is very normal, it doesn't appear. So I just feel like the normal mum next door. So, and the kids don't seem to notice it because I am the same with them. So it's easy.
Do you, if you had to be, well, we all have to have this conversation with them, the social media and the mobile, have you had to be very specific? Because, you know, we've all had to say to our children, you can't put that on, please take it down, all of that kind of thing. Have you had to have more of that? Because you're into sort of number three going into teenage now. What have you learned that you'd maybe do differently?
I mean, I just think it's almost like too late. The 7-year-old's already on it. He's got his games he likes. It's really hard because they're obviously Jamie's children. So I say to them, which I feel bad, is you can't be coming out of a nightclub. You can't be seen doing that, be in the front of the Daily Mail before you know it. So they've always had that kind of, which is quite handy, that extra fear. You know, I don't even know if they can make, I'm not on Snapchat. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I only get Instagram, but they don't really post a lot. And I think, so where are you? What are you doing then? You must be on Snapchat. So I don't think I can keep up. As far as I know, they're doing all the right things, but, you know, they can slip up many times. Luckily with the older girls, they didn't really have it. They passed that major bit. They got it now, obviously, but they're in control of their own lives and they're all private anyway. It is our constant daily battle.
Do you do the phones in the room thing? So I have this thing, which with the older girls, because they're like 21 and 20 now, where I just had no phones in the room, and for like a year they didn't speak to me. Oh, in the evenings. And it was, I mean, I wrote about it in my parenting book, it was hell. They just, and actually my husband secretly buckled without telling me, because he just couldn't stand the horror of it. Do you have that? Is that help? I always say, from all the experts I've talked to, that's the one thing with phones, just don't let them have it in the room, say after 9 p.m. in the evening.
Well, the only thing we've got is the thing called Hour Pact, which I don't know if you've heard of, which just the phones turn off at a certain time. And it has been brilliant for us. And Petal hates it. She hates it. It's embarrassing. It's, you know, suddenly she'll be out and then the phone will go, ooh, everything turns off. Apart from me texting her saying, happy Tanya, are you okay? How are you? So they all have that, apart from the elder two. So they were like, we have no more Hour Pact. We're like 21. Otherwise, it is in her room, but there's nothing. Oh, it's just a black screen. Then it turns on again at 6 a.m. So that's the only control. But I did try taking the phone away and somehow it managed to keep going back. And, you know, then I'm downstairs, I've fallen asleep, I've forgotten. And it's just, you know, it's just a nightmare. So the Hour Pact saves, you know, all the three little ones all have it. So
that sounds good. Is it just R-P-A-C-T? Is it Hour Pact?
It's Hour, sorry.
Hour Pact. Right. Yeah, great.
So you can see everything on it and you can see what they're doing and la, la, la. So it's saved us, actually.
Oh, that's really useful to know for people with younger kids. Now, the question we always ask all of our lovely guests on this show, because we are about being midlife women, menopause. How has it been for you? And did you know what was coming at you?
No, I didn't know. But apparently it's been going on for, I reckon, about 10 years, slowly, apparently. But as I've kind of learned to, a bit of research, blah, 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 and there's so much at you, I just hate the short temper that I have developed. Mm. I really, really hate it. So, I'll attack. Yesterday, I attacked the sellotape. It done nothing. It actually was coming off quite nicely, but it was just got a bit caught. And I was going, you are you. And I was thinking, oh, my God, this is crazy. I mean, you go into the menopause and you come out and go, oh, my God. Then you go back in again. I can't seem to control. And the tiredness. But yeah, I had no idea. The thing I love about it is that, say, we went to a rugby game yesterday and all the women, forget the match, were like, oh, how did you feel today? What about this? And we just totally menopaused it out. And then by 5 hours later, we've been standing in the cold. We hadn't noticed because we just talked about perimenopause, menopause. And most of them were younger than me, but it was just, that's the brilliant thing is women really talk. I don't know what it was like 20 years ago, but now we talk. So it's actually quite fun if you want to be like, but it is, it's been a real shock. I have to say, I can't believe sometimes that it's me, the me that was like eating 2 years ago.
I mean, I think if you've had anxiety in the past, it's ramped up to like 50 with the hormones fluctuating.
Yeah.
So we're like, I'm 56 this year. Trish, you're what, 57?
I think I might be a year older than you. You probably mentioned that once or twice.
You do know what she is.
So we didn't know. We didn't know in our late 40s that this was coming. We weren't going to take HRT because we'd heard all these horror stories.
Yes.
I mean, you're younger. Is it better now for as a younger than us person? Are you okay with HRT? Is all that a bit more in your sphere?
I mean, my mum's kind of, she's not against it, but she's kind of like, now have you thought about just breathing through it like I did? But I said, Mum, you said that when you gave birth to us, you read Vogue. Whereas, to be real, well, it must have hurt you. She's like, no, it didn't hurt me at all. So my sisters and I, but like, Mum, come on. So now, I mean, thank God, I did the test that where you urinate on the PIPA.
Yeah,
that one. So I did that. My sister chose to do something else. So we've all done different things. But I do stupidly have a fear about HRT. I still think, oh my goodness me, it might cause something. And I can't get that out of my head, even though I know very well that's not the truth. I certainly did not say no, but I just haven't started it yet. But ideally, I'd like to find something that kind of made my life a bit better than it is in terms of how I feel. Where did I read, Lorraine, something? Maybe it was you said about when you were at the stationery cupboard and you just shut the door. And was that you? And you screamed?
Yes, that was me. I was shut myself in the stationery cupboard at work because I thought I had a brain tumour. So, my symptoms were quite extreme. And my deputy came in and said, are you all right? Do you want to come out of the cupboard today? And I just had reached a point where the glass had just overflowed. I couldn't remember what I was doing, who I was. And it was just... And I could see no point in any of it either. So I think that's the depth of, I was very lucky HRT within, a couple of weeks, I got my sleep back and I felt I was back in the room again. I mean, it's not for everybody, but it is. Mm. It does make such a significant, it's just so good that everyone's talking about it. As you say, women chatting about it. It's brilliant.
That story really resonated with me. And I haven't done that, but I was thinking, God, but that was great. That's actually how I do feel. I was saying to Jamie, I feel like Lorraine. I just want to go in a cupboard and I don't know what's wrong with me. Then I go out and I make dinner and I carry on. And you just think, what was all of that about? That isn't normal to feel like that and then carry on. It's just, just too weird for me. Mm. So
do you feel like you know where to get help and advice?
No, from what, Reels, Instagram? Okay. I just can't, Davina McCall, it's everywhere, books.
I'll send you a list.
Oh, yeah. Send me a list. No, I'll put that.
And your GP.
I'll send you a list.
Go and see a GP. Yeah. That's a good place to start as well. Yeah. Oh, now, you have your lovely Little Bird clothing company, which Next sell, which is fantastic. Yeah. We love Next. There's a bit more time. Do you feel like you've got a bit more time on your hands with two of them on the way and getting a little bit older? Because my twins are at uni now. But having a little bit more time on your hands, do you think maybe you might do a little bit more for you? Or is this stuff you and Jamie want to do together?
I mean, I had all these ideas and I still do, but actually I'm thinking maybe I want to travel. I don't even really like traveling, but maybe I want to conquer some fears and do some, if I travel, it's got to be something really exciting and something that I'm really into. But instead of trying to get a job or trying to do something, maybe I just want to do something more for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm in that lucky position again, where I can think about what I may want to do. Yeah, I just think more time with Jamie. He craves that. And I'm just like, no, I've got to do this costume. I've got to do this concert. And in fact, I don't really have to do those things now. It's slowly ebbing away. So I would like to spend more time with him and do more fun things because we kind of had that 10 years. We missed out when we were younger doing really fun things because of work. So probably spend more time with him.
It's intriguing, actually, because you renewed your vows. There were some lovely pictures on Instagram. You went to, I think it was the Maldives, wasn't it? And it looked. And he gave an interview on, I remember seeing it on Breakfast Telly, saying it's totally different when you can write your own vows, having been through all your...
I think he was saying, basically, when you say the words like, I mean, you know, the guy was very relaxed. He's like, this, the usual sort of vows. And we didn't write our own. We just listened to what he said. He said the words mean so much more. In sickness and in health, love and cherish. He said everything, we've been through so much, good and bad. And when I look at you now, we're doing this in front of our children. It means so much more than what we did the whole before, you know, we were like 25 years old. I really understood that. And I thought, actually, it's so true, because we're still together and we've got these five little people looking up at us going, oh, this is amazing. And, you know, I recommend everyone, if they can, to do their vows in any which way you can do, because it really, the words just mean a lot more when you do it second time round and you've been through a lot.
It's a nice place to end, isn't it? So thank you so much coming on the show today, Jules. It's been really helpful. I think people will learn from your journey, and thank you for being honest and sharing the sort of tougher parts of it as well, because it was very difficult to talk about. Thank you for being a highly sensitive person like Trish. That's two.
Yes, you're in my gang,
Trish. I get you.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, Jules.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honour to be always asked on any podcast, but this is a good one. So thank you.
Lorraine, have we got time for a noodle? Because I know you've got to hot foot it up to Birmingham, up to Brum for a book event.
I had to find out where Birmingham was, but yes, I'm off up to talk to the wonderful people of Birmingham about the paperback of my book, What's Wrong With Me, the menopause midlife second act positivity book. So I'm talking to my most amazing book PR about going to Birmingham. I'm worked out it's only an hour and a half away, but it brought to mind a kick up the 80s to me,
right?
Birmingham. Do you know why? What's the connection between a kick up the 80s telly show and Birmingham?
Is it Rick Mayall? Is it Kevin Turvey?
It is Rick Mayall. That's Kevin Turvey, who was the world's worst investigative telly reporter. And he would be in the spotlight with that really, really strong Birmingham accent and just shout at you about everything that was going through his mind. It was absolutely hopeless and hapless. It was 1987. I'm not going to do the accent because I don't want to get cancelled and
offend anybody.
Into trouble, offend anyone. And I think the Dudley accent's different from the other. So I don't want to, say that.
He was from Redditch, accent. Actually, Kevin Turvey.
He was from Redditch, yes.
Yeah.
But Kick Up the 80s launched a thousand careers. So Peter Capaldi designed the graphics for it because he was a graphic designer, one of them knew, before he became Doctor Who, yes.
Yeah.
Robbie Coltrane was in it.
R.I.P.
And our favourite, who's in Curb Your Enthusiasm now, absolutely brilliant still, Tracy Ullman.
I know.
It was such a launching pad. It was
Miriam Margolyes was in it. And Richard Stilgo. Do you remember Richard Stilgo? Beard and a piano is what I generally remember about him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest nostalgia noodle of all time. And Kevin Turvey was really only funny because of the accent. It has to be said.
It was very much pre-Young Ones, wasn't it, that character? Sort of the ranty, raving character from it. But Rick Mayall, 10 years this year.
I know, he looks so lovely and young and so funny.
You can watch them on YouTube.
On the BBC. Yeah, very rebellious for the BBC, I think.
It was actually. Sketch shows. Yelling at us. No good sketch shows these days, are there? That's what I would say. You have to watch these old ones on YouTube. That's the way to do it. Right then.
Okay,
And let's get you on that train to Birmingham, young lady. Hope you have a lovely time up there. Head north, not south. That's the only instruction I'm giving you, the directions. But thanks you to everybody for listening to this week's episode. As always, love to hear from you on our Facebook group, on email, on Instagram, and of course our Substack newsletter, which you can sign up to. Postcards from Lorraine and Trish. See you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds.
Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.